Welcome to Manager Tools. This is Sarah.
And I'm Mark.
Today's cast is The Four Hidden Dangers of Not Delegating, Part 1 of 2.
This cast answers these questions. What if I don't think I can delegate? What are the risks of not delegating? And what are the results of not delegating?
If you want answers to these questions and more, keep listening.
This October, take advantage of a unique opportunity to schedule in-person organizational training in Europe without incurring international travel costs. Our team will already be in the region for public events, and several dates are still available for private sessions. Even better, we're extending U.S. pricing to exclusive European deliveries. An uncommon value for high-impact on-site training. Learn more or reserve your date. Contact Maggie at customerservice@manager-tools.com. Don't miss out.
Here we are today to talk about delegation. And far too many people aren't aware of the issues, I'm going to say, with their insufficient delegation. Now, for those of you or those of our listeners today who are familiar with the Manager Tools Trinity, you'll probably know that we often call delegation the silent fourth part of the Manager Tools Trinity. And we don't mean it's silent because no one's doing it, although you'd never know the difference because so few actually do it. And we've heard it all before. We've heard all of the reasons for not delegating, from I can do it better than they can to I don't have time to delegate. It takes longer to teach someone than do it myself. They don't know how to do it. They're too busy. All of the things. We hear all of the things. And we have tried for years to, even though all of these concerns exist, encourage delegation while pointing out the value and the rewards, albeit less successfully than I wish we'd have been.
Yeah, I agree. And now we're going to take the opposite approach and try to scare people. Uh-huh. Look, the fact is, it's a silent fourth part of the Trinity, but it also is a silent killer because managers don't delegate, and then they don't get promoted to executive. And it's really hard. Everyone always assumes that the things that hurt your career are acts of commission. In other words, things you did that people don't like, or send the wrong message, or make it clear that you're not an executive type or whatever. Everybody has these weird ideas about what it takes to be executive, some of which are valid because the people making the decisions at times are idiots. But the failure to delegate is a sin of omission. And nobody thinks about, well, I didn't do that, unless your boss specifically says, well, you didn't do this thing I kind of thought you would do, because some bosses are really bad at giving clear guidance. But yeah, this is an omission mistake. And we want you to know that if you omit delegating, there are going to be effects. There are notable effects. We have data on it. And if this doesn't convince you, nothing will. And I hate to tell you, we love you. We'll do everything we can to help you along the way. But if you're not a delegator, I really am not going to wish for you to become an executive, because you will be a negative effect on your organization.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so for today, we're going to talk about the four dangers, right, of not delegating. The first being reduced trust, then reduced development, followed by overload, and then ultimately the junior executive failure.
Oh, that's my favorite one. I saved it for last.
Always do that. All right. So we're starting with the hidden danger of reduced trust. And before we get into the hidden danger itself, let's be clear. Delegation is a core part of managing. If you're only doing one-on-ones and feedback, you're not fully discharging your responsibilities as a manager. And if you're a manager, those are probably some tough words to hear. And I understand that, but you should know beyond a shadow of a doubt, we can guarantee you that your chief executive expects you to be delegating. Just because you learned it from us and the organization didn't make it clear to you it was part of your responsibility doesn't mean it's not part of your responsibility. This is how our organizations are designed to operate. It's a core functionality of organizational design. It just is. I'm sorry you didn't know.
Yeah. And why would you know? There's no requirement for anybody to take an organizational theory class, right? In order to become a manager. You know, you mentioned your chief executive expects you to delegate. To be fair, for most managers, the expectations of chief executives are so far removed from themselves that that's not something that's communicated. But I will give you a good corollary. When we start the Effective Manager Conference, the first slide is about the effective manager's two core responsibilities. And unless people have listened to the podcast and heard us talk about it for years, two decades now, they don't know it. And sometimes a group will struggle. And then I change the question rather than asking, hey, what do you think your first responsibility is? And they say things like listening or collaborating, all very nice words that don't really matter in the big picture. And then I say, let me ask the question differently. What does your chief executive want from you? And they all get it immediately. Results. It's just like, oh yeah, I know what the chain of command wants. The chain of command wants results.
Yeah. See, and Mark, I use a different question too. Mine is, why do we pay you? And they immediately get it. So kind of the same thing, right? It's what does the organization want from you?
The chief executive's not going to keep you around if you're not delivering the results she wants you to deliver. Yeah. So if your chief executive were to hear about one of her managers, well, this guy, he doesn't delegate. Pretty clearly, she may not say it, but she would definitely think, tell him to start delegating or give up getting promoted, or maybe even go to work for one of our competitors. Go mess up their development. Go mess up their succession planning efforts. Now, some of you are going, well, wait a minute. If this is such a big deal, why am I not hearing about it? I'll give you two rationales for that. One is because when you get to become a manager, development starts to becoming more individualized. And there's many people between you and the chief executive, and you may work for one or two or three or four bosses in your chain of leadership that just don't care. And frankly, they believe that because they made it to their position without any specific guidance or coaching or encouragement or feedback or delegation, that you should be able to get to their level too. Because heck, if we start training people, it's not as hard, and we may have a bunch of people who aren't tough when they get to the top. But another reason is because the whole succession planning thing of large organizations is cloaked in a great deal of mystery. Now, there's some good associated with that. You can't just go around telling everybody what we're asking every future executive, what he or she should work on. So there are legitimate, if not compelling, rationales for why this requirement of delegation hasn't gotten to you. And, you know, the CEO is thinking, I want you to delegate. And one of the reasons is because she delegates. And, you know, if we ask the manager tools community right now, they would say, well, of course the CEO delegates, right? That's easy. There's so much coming in to her or to him or whatever. But then if they are delegating and somehow 5 levels, 6 levels, 7 levels down, we're not. The question becomes, what's the managerial theory, the organizational theory, the organizational principle or idea that says at what level in the managerial hierarchy does the need for delegation stop? Right? And in fact, I can give you it from the other side. Delegation happens at the bottom of the organization too, when individuals have too much to do and start making priority choices about what they're going to do and what they're not doing and what they're willing to get in trouble for, because they're saying, I know this is number one and that's number five. If I'm going to get in trouble, I'm not going to get in trouble for not doing number one. I'm going to get in trouble for doing the thing, not doing number five. And that's called delegating to the floor. And if you've never heard that phrase before, there's a podcast and there's many mentions of it in the entire 20-year history of Manager Tools guidance.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You're absolutely right. I often say at our conferences, Mark, the best, in fact, the only level of hierarchy within your organization that can make successfully work, stop work decisions is that frontline manager. They have enough information about what's going on in the organization and enough awareness of that individual task that they can do it well. No CEO is going to come down to the first line of your organization and say, hey, you don't need to do that anymore. You can just stop that thing. They don't understand anything about it. And in fact, what I would say is when directors do it, It causes fires. And every individual manager knows this. Yeah. Your boss, your boss's boss says, we're not doing that anymore. And you're like, whoa, 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 yeah. whoa. I don't think you understand the implications of that. I don't care. We're not doing it. No, I think we should stop doing it now. And you stop doing it and everything lights on fire. That frontline manager is responsible for that clearing the cache, that getting things out that are no longer adding value. Absolutely.
Exactly.
Absolutely. Yeah. And folks, as we've said many times, effective human organizations make sure everyone has too much to do. We recently recorded a podcast and it was called Everybody Has Too Much Work to Do. Listen to the podcast. It's great. Straight down from the top, executives, managers, individual contributors always have too much to do. It is by design. It's because the problems associated with everybody having too little work to do or trying, the organization trying and failing to find the perfect amount of work to do are far worse than everyone in the organization having too much work to do. They know it. It's a design flaw. And again, Mark said, we don't teach y'all organization design when you start working in an organization. So this having too much work to do, it's supposed to encourage and yes, even force everyone within the organization itself to learn how to prioritize. And for those of us in management, in leadership, what that means is it's supposed to force us to learn how to delegate some of our responsibilities. And again, to Mark's point previously, even individual contributors can delegate. They're just delegating to the floor because they don't have a person to delegate to. But yeah, this too much work to do problem, no, your organization knows it exists. It's by design. And add to that, what happened last time you said, whoa, 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 we need to hire more people. Was the organization like, oh yeah, go, oh,
sure, totally.
Go, hire like five of them. Or yeah. Were they like, no, you just take a little minute here and think about it. And if they hesitated to immediately throw money at that problem, knowing they've created a world where you cannot get everything done, it's simple math, folks. Then the organization expects you to figure out how to delegate and remove no longer useful work or lesser useful work.
Yeah, exactly.
Join us on our executive speaker series call August 14th as Tim Hill, Director of Product Management, takes us beyond methodologies. Tim's going to provide behaviors for product management and practical guidance for delivery, outlining a specific actionable project management framework called the 5-5-6 process. He'll explain how his company uses the system, which covers both inbound product management and outbound strategies. Join us on the call. We'd love to have you there. All of our executive tools licensees are invited. You can become an ET licensee today to receive your invitation. Visit us online at manager-tools.com/memberships.
Okay, so having made the case for delegation and the organizational principles behind it and so on, let's get to the dangers. The first hidden danger is that you'll reduce trust between you and your directs. If two groups of managers are doing one-on-ones, one group is delegating, one group is not delegating, or barely delegating, the delegating manager's trust scores stay high, while gradually the non-delegating managers see a statistically significant decline in trust. Mm-hmm. Okay. Now, you could probably figure out why that is, but I'm just saying that's what the data are. Okay. If you do one-on-ones, you build up a trust score, let's say you're a 7 or an 8 out of 10, and then you don't delegate. At some point, your trust scores are going to go down as compared to the manager who builds the trust and then shows he actually or she actually yeah. trusts her people by delegating to them.
When I heard that data point originally, Mark, I thought to myself, really? But then I ran, as we often suggest you guys do, the middleman test in my mind. And I thought to myself, what about those managers who used to trust me to do more than I knew, I thought I knew, I was capable of doing?
Right.
How did I feel about how they trusted me versus the ones that didn't give me things and stretch me, even though they knew I might screw it up? And immediately it's like, yes, of course, light bulb. Of course, when somebody gives you something to do and you're not even sure you can do it and they let you do it and screw it up a little bit, of course you trust them a little bit more. And folks, we're going to dig a little bit deeper also on that data itself. These reduced trust scores are largely driven by reductions in trust among above average to top performers. So to think about it this way, lower performers' trust scores generally don't change. Delegate, don't delegate. Lower performers' trust scores kind of stay roughly about the same. But your better performers' trust scores dropped enough to drive a statistically significant drop across the entire team. Your top performer scores dropped so much, they brought down the entire team, even though the lower performer scores didn't change at all.
Yeah. Think about that. You take the time to build trust with one-on-ones, and then you lose it later because whatever reasons you have for not delegating. And the trust depreciation happens most greatly among your most important team members. I said that recently, actually, in a training I was doing. And somebody said, well, why are your top performers most important? And I said, well, let's be clear. I'm not talking about the value of their human souls. Everybody's an equally valuable human being. But in terms of organizational output, which is why this entire conversation is occurring, your top performers are more important or more valuable to the organization. That's why there's a podcast called The Coaching Dilemma, which basically tells you about four different levels of performance from four different of your directs. And it asks you the questions, which should you spend additional time with? Most people choose the weakest performer, and in fact, that's the wrong answer. What you're supposed to spend your time is on your top performer, because a 5% increase from your top performer is more valuable to the organization than a 5% increase from your bottom performer. Please don't write me and say, I can't believe you said that. That sounds terrible. Please go listen to the Coaching Dilemma podcast. It's crazy to think that you would get the idea of building trust. And I don't think anybody who would get the idea of building trust through one-on-ones would then argue that for your top performers, if they thought they could do some of your job, that not delegating it to them would not affect the trust, right? So everybody gets both sides of the equation, but some manager just like, yeah, I'm still not going to delegate.
Yeah. And for me, Mark, I'm a high D. I'm assertive. I'm task-focused. I think to myself immediately, why would I waste my time building trust only to degrade it?
Yeah.
Like, why would I invest all those man hours into one? If I'm just going to ruin it anyway, why even try in the beginning? What a huge waste of time. And for those of you who aren't delegating, you might be wondering, why does this lack of delegation affect trust? And this is where our data turns into anecdotes. Our sense of the responses when we asked these higher performing individuals was pretty clear. I know there are some things I need to learn about my boss's job, and I think I could probably do them. But my boss clearly doesn't trust me with those things. Otherwise, as busy as they are, they would have delegated one or more of those tasks to me. They must not trust me as much as I've earned their trust. And to be clear, I've worked very hard to earn that trust.
Yeah, we heard that over and over again when we interviewed above average or top performers in teams where trust started to decline. And there didn't appear to be any organizational forces that would have caused that. One other thing about engaging in a behavior, and the behavior is not delegating, that we have seen leads to reduced trust. We've all been through tough periods for our organizations in our professional lives, or most of us have. If you're new and it hasn't happened to you yet, just wait a while. It will happen. There's a cycle. It happens. Companies go through good times and bad times. Layoffs, hiring hundreds, that's a stress period, right? Loss of a huge client, gain of a huge client, massive shakeup at the top. If you're part of the organization, doesn't have to be at the very, very top. A union strike, a tragedy, a disaster, an incident, something like that. Again, if you haven't had one yet, you're probably relatively new to the adult professional life, and it will happen. And when it does, the parts of your organization with high trust will be fine, and the parts with low trust will underperform. Say what you want in your performance review about being great all year except for that crisis. That's not how your boss or the organization will see it. You will be seen as a weak leader, because there's an old saying, in a crisis, you don't perform up to your expectations, you perform down to your training. And if you haven't trained your people to take on more responsibility by delegating, they won't perform well, and especially when you need them to. And crises reveal true character. To say nothing of the tactical value of already having delegated, so you know how to do it, they know how to respond, they know what the parameters of the discussion are, your team is already strengthened with higher level skills. It's just crazy. If you're not delegating, you're literally walking into a difficult situation that is inevitable with a significant disadvantage.
Yeah, Mark, I immediately think when we start talking about those crises events, I start thinking about or remembering back to the notes of thanks we got from members of our community back starting in March of 2020 with COVID, right? And some of us had that trust built. So when we transitioned to work from home in that crisis, it was fine. It wasn't great, let's be clear, but it was fine compared to other teams that were just decimated, that fell apart, that struggled for a year or 2 years to try and put the wheels back on because the ability, the relationships needed to handle such a stressful event weren't there, didn't exist. And folks, we know that as much as we say this, we're not persuading some of the people who are listening. You're going to be a control freak. No offense. I can recognize control freaks, folks. I am one in recovery, so I assure you, I know what they look like. And some people see it as a badge of honor to be really, really, really busy. Or you don't believe your directs would have. You don't think your directs could do that thing. And you don't think they're going to do it as well as you can do it, even though, let me be clear, you've had like 100 reps and they've done it about zero times. So how could they be any better? But the people we will persuade to engage in delegation are the people who will become your bosses. And maybe they'll engage in some career or performance coaching and you will learn the lesson.
Yeah.
When the student is ready, the teacher appears.
If I'm a top performer and I work for a boss that doesn't delegate, I'll learn that pretty quickly if I'm savvy. And I'll go to work for somebody who also does and they'll help me get promoted. And pretty soon that boss who didn't delegate is going to work for me. As we often say, if you don't like your boss, find a new one or get promoted twice.
Thanks, folks. Join us again next week as we continue this topic. Now, help us help others. Tell your friends. And of course, follow, rate, and review our podcast. And remember, 5 stars only, please.